This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We have a guest here from Wisconsin, and her name is Lisa Vehoves. And she has done many, many things that are sea-changing in the world of poetry. And here she is with an opening poem.
This poem is from my chapbook called Fan Mail from Some Flounder. The poem is called Cloud Reader. Remember when you were small, before you read words, you taught yourself to read clouds? You'd lie on your back for hours and never tire of the stories the clouds told. There was the one about the dragon who became a three-legged elephant, and another about a thin, bearded man who chased a fat lady so far across the sky that they became a herd of buffalo, and then a fish who leaped to his last breath from a pinky-purple sea. You thought you'd grow up to make a living at it, reading clouds, not knowing that cloud reading is a thankless task left only to children and dreamers. Good days those were, when reading clouds was your bread and butter.
That is the voice of Lisa Vehoves. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're on location today. And Lisa has done many important things in Wisconsin, and I think poetry needs her. So first of all, I'm looking at a book here on the table called Van Gogh Dreams, which is an anthology you've put together and edited. And I would like you to tell us a little bit about what it takes to put together an anthology, how many poets are in it, and what it is about.
Well, this anthology is about its poems that were inspired by the life and art of Vincent Van Gogh, the late 19th century painter who, during his lifetime, was not really recognized for what he was doing. He was so outside the box of where painting was at the time. He was pushing the limits. And so he had to just do his work and, you know, not worry about what was he struggled. He struggled, but he also, one of the things I learned in putting the anthology together is that Van Gogh had a love of poetry, which I did not know. And he would put together books of poems by famous poets for his family as a gift to share poetry. So while he's making poetry with color and of the natural world, he was also sharing words with people, which I think is amazing. So putting the book together, it was a labor of love in some ways. I had some people reaching out to me with poems about Van Gogh, and I suddenly realized, wow, there could be more out there. So I put out a call, gathered more, put it together, and I'm going to share one that is one of the things about when you look at a work of art and write a poem. Those kind of poems are called ekphrastic poetry. Ekphrastic meaning you've shifted from one art form to another. So you could make a painting based on a poem, or you can make a poem based on a painting or a work of music. It doesn't matter what art form you're working in. If you're going back and forth between them, you're doing something ekphrastic. So this is a poem by a Wisconsin poet named Laurel Devitt, and it's called The Potato Eaters. Four sit around the table in the dank, dark room. A hanging oil lamp sheds slight light upon the gloom. There's a window in the wall at the diner's back. It sheds no light at all, but affirms their world is black. The lamplight falls through gathering soot from the smut-producing oil on the scraggy faces, fingers of these tillers of the soil. A woman in a bonnet pours coffee in four cups. Another begs her husband to eat his supper up. His supper is potatoes clustered on a platter. A single toiler holds one up, highlighting what here matters. A picture on the wall declares this place is home. The peasants come to this grim place from digging in the loam. It's grim enough for these four souls who eat their paltry meal, but in the foreground stands a child who makes this art surreal. Her black clothed back is to us. She breathes in the smoky air. She is audience to this harsh scene. She is the hope that's there.
And that actually is a representation in words of what is seen visually, which is a wonderful way to teach children how to begin poetry by looking. Now, do you have a poem in this book?
I do. This poem is called Love Letter for Vincent. I would have sat quietly while you painted the stars, and I would not have tossed the sunflowers before you were done with them. I would have tended the irises, dusted your chair, and made your bed, in love with the vibration inside all things, just like you. I would not have judged the cut ear or the old sermons. I would have cooked your potatoes, wiped clean your shoes, and bought you another absinthe at midnight in the pool hall. I would have brought a picnic lunch and a cool drink to the wheat field. I would have marveled with you at the sun and the patterns the blackbirds made as they flew low along the horizon.
So obviously this came from a feeling of love that you have for this artist. And the way you show your reverence is to honor him by gathering all these poets. How many were represented, and are they just from Wisconsin?
There are 31 poets. I make one, so there were 30 other besides me. And no, they're not all from Wisconsin. Most of them are. There's a poet from California, Washington State, and Florida. Most of the people were from Wisconsin.
Well, while we're talking about that state, what's happening in Wisconsin? I hear you're just burning it up.
Well, we have a wonderful networking group in Wisconsin called the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets. And this is a group that has been in existence for over 2 decades, and they do great work bringing people together. We have a new poet laureate in Wisconsin, Margaret Rosga. She's very interested in social justice issues. She's done a lot of work with kids in the schools. She's a role model for everyone. She just does wonderful things. So there's a something I've been doing at our local library, our public library in Sheboygan, Mead Library. We, for the last 4 years, during National Poetry Month, have put together a program called Poetic Pairings. And this is something where I work to invite community members to pick a poem from their life that has had meaning to them in some way, either from childhood, high school, adult life, whatever it may be. And then I pair them with a poet who responds to the poem, and the two people read their pairing together. We do 10 pairings for the event, and it's always just brings forth this sort of magical synergy between the two people. And my purpose in it is to just show people what poetry means in everyday life, that it means something, and you find healing, you find inspiration.
Have you always had this magnificent obsession with poetry? What's it all about?
Well, I would say that yes, since my early childhood years, I've been fascinated by the rhythm and the rhyme of sort of traditional verse poetry. But that was because growing up, I loved Dr. Seuss, and I found that to be something that just moved me along. And then I always tried to write poetry as a youth. And in my later years, it's just still with me. So, yeah.
Well, if it's with you, it's with us. Let us hear some of your own poetry. Set it up and tell us the book it's from. I would like them to know a little bit about you. Lisa Vihos is our guest. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress, but we're on location. The poems of Lisa have been in many journals, and she's received numerous awards from the Wisconsin People and Ideas and the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets, 2 Pushcart Prize nominations. And we're hearing from some of her books. We heard something from her 4th chapbook, Fan Mail from Some Flounder, which was her opening poem. And she's poetry and arts editor of Stone Boat Literary Journal, so we can hear about that later. But most of all, and more importantly, is her own voice. And tell us what you're going to read, and the book, and the title. And here's Lisa Vihos.
Okay, this is another poem from Fan Mail from Some Flounder. And it's a poem about poets. It's called Some Facts About Poets. Poets do not grow on trees, but they do tend to inhabit gardens. Poets are not above the law, but the law is of no concern to them. Poets have a mission, which is generally impossible. They run like any other human, but are known to sprout antlers and wings when least expected. All poets began as children, back before the dinosaurs. They grew aware of sun and moon, flying saucers, mud, and old age. They never forget an ancient touch, taste, or smell, but can't tell you what was for lunch yesterday. They are Einstein's theory of relativity in the flesh. They don't split infinitives except under duress. Their shirts are clean, unpressed. Awake, they dream. Asleep, they work. Poets are just as rowdy or quiet as the next guy. They love the world and will tell you in every rhythm imaginable and ask no wage for their tinkering.
I think that's terrific. Awake, they dream. Asleep, they work. And, you know, we need a good rap. They're regular people, right? And I think more and more we are knowing that to write poetry is just to say what you think. And it's taking away some of the dust, I think. We're dusting off poetry and rinsing off words. And I believe that it is becoming a language of the people.
That's very interesting. One thing I like to do with my poetry is find a phrase or something that is out in the world and then take that and kind of open it up and look at it. And so I'm going to share a poem from another one of my chapbooks called This Particular Heaven. And this poem is called Holy Cow. So, you know, the phrase, holy cow. But here's what I did with it. Holy cow. I am the one, the only one, the one whose name you utter under your breath when the wind comes through, makes you shudder. I am the one who lies down in green pasture, and my milk flows like nectar beside the still water. With me in your field, you shall not want. I've kicked many a bucket, and one swish of my tail sends flies into orbit. Though I stand in the muck and the mire, bound to grass, to earth, to desire, I once jumped the moon, remember? You came too, with your dreams of a cat and a fiddle, a dish and a spoon. Remember, there was a little dog full of sport who would not stop laughing at us.
Lisa Vijos, I'm Grace Cavalieri. This is The Poet and the Poem. And Lisa is from Wisconsin. She does many things, and one of them is fascinating. It's called 1,000 Poets for Change. What are you changing?
Well, the group is actually called 100,000 Poets for Change. So we have a lot more than just 1,000, but that's okay. And 100,000 Poets for Change was started by two poets in Northern California in 2011, Michael Rothenberg and Terry Carrion. And this came out, I found it on Facebook. I found a call that Michael and Terry had put out to ask, they were asking people, would you be willing to do a poetry event in your community that would speak about peace and justice and sustainability to promote these things in your own community? You know, would you do a poetry event? And at the time, we were having all sorts of stuff going on in the state of Wisconsin with a new governor, and there was lots of issues. And I was like, yes, I will do that. I will do a poetry event. And so that was 2011. And so what their idea was that on the last Saturday of September, people all over the world would be doing an event together in their own respective communities. And you kind of realize that you're part of something bigger, and you bring people together and you share what's going on in your immediate locale, but you know that other people are doing the same thing in India, in Mexico, all over the U.S., in Ireland. And it was just this amazing feeling to be part of that.
Was it a one-time only? And do I remember you being in Italy?
Yes. No, first of all, it was not a one-time only. It's happened every year since 2011 and keeps growing. And Michael and Terry organized an event, a conference in Salerno, Italy, to bring the organizers, as many as could make it, together to meet each other. We all knew each other from Facebook, but we hadn't ever necessarily sat in the same room together. So we got to talk about what does all this mean? And what are you changing, or how does this make change? And I think it's not necessarily something easily measurable, but I do think that through these moments of sharing in community, things happen. And this is where the book, The Migration Anthology, fits in, which I could share about if you would like.
Lisa, people say poetry and art make nothing happen, but you're telling us that just by community, just by sheer masses of people sharing their ideas and their feelings to a common good, do you believe that ever can radiate outward from the participants? That's my interest. How do we have it go to another tier from the organizers and the believers?
I think what you have to do is make a space that's safe for people who might not think of themselves necessarily as poets, but who maybe know some poems or have heard, you know, have something that mm-hmm. has been meaningful to them that then they feel safe to share. And often then they will also feel safe to write their own new words. And then you've suddenly planted the seed and then the sprouts start to grow out of that.
I agree. And that's what you're doing with your dialoguing of poems, where you were talking about the library effort, where one person has a poem and then you match it with another poem and they speak to each other. So you're enlarging and expanding all the time. And now we have a book about migration. Nothing could be more important.
This book, it's called From Everywhere a Little, a Migration Anthology. And this literally grew out of the last 100,000 Poets for Change open mic reading that we did on September 29th, 2018. And here, just 6 months later, we have a book. What happened was I put out the call with a theme approach. So I had learned about a song by a Uruguayan singer-songwriter named Jorge Drexler. And in this song called Movimiento, or Movement in English, he says, "I'm not from here, but you're not either. From nowhere entirely, from everywhere a little." And when I put the call out to the community, I shared that little snippet, and people came, people who maybe had never even written poetry before, answering with words and bringing poems. And I kept saying, as we were going through the open mic, I kept saying, we have to make a book of this. And so we did. We used, there's this first section in the book called From the Reading, and then myself and my co-editor, Dawn Hogue, she helped me. We put out a bigger call to through our poetry circles, and we collected many more poems, all on the theme of migration, immigration. And the beautiful thing about this book is that it touches on immigration stories from decades ago, you know, with families thinking back, or a poet thinking back to some other time. But then there were things right of this moment and what's going on in our country now. Also, there's a section that is a little bit more related to the natural world and the migration of monarch butterflies and cranes and all the kind of natural movement through the world that we all living organisms make. So whenever I look at the book, I get a little teared up and I think, did I actually help make this happen? Yes, I did. But it's a beautiful thing.
Everything you do starts from real passion right in the center of your heart. Otherwise, I don't think it would matter. I don't think you could do it. Do we have a sample from that book?
Sure. I'll read one sample. This is actually from a young woman. Her name is Isabel Martinez. And Isabel actually is 13 years old. She came to the reading. Her dad was deported 7 years ago. He's Mexican. Her mom is American citizen. Her mom actually was running for state assembly in Manitowoc County. She did not win, but she's a tough woman. I think she's going to be in our state government at some point, this wonderful woman. Anyway, this is Isabel's poem. It's called, it's an acrostic, which means you take a word, and then each line of the poem starts with one letter from the word. So the poem is called Immigrant Poem, and the word that runs down the left side of the page is the word immigrant. Here's the poem. I miss my dad. Mexico is too far away. Misunderstood. I will never stop fighting. Got milk? Not without immigrants. Refugees are welcome here. Anti-racism? Not seen you in 6 years, trying hard to get you back.
That's the voice of Lisa Vijos. Tell us more about that story. Do we have a follow-up? Do we know if that man is ever going to return?
It seems, so Isabel's mom's name is Jennifer Estrada, and Jennifer, you know, has said he's not ever going to be able to come back because of something about the way the visa was and the coming. They went back and forth several times at some other point. And then there was a point at which he could no longer come back in. And this is where it's standing at this moment. Would it ever change? I hope to God it would, but it doesn't seem like it. So it's difficult.
Before we hear another poem or two, I see that you have a project designing and building a children's reading garden in Malawi. Please take me with you.
Sure, sure. This began because I worked at a liberal arts college north of Sheboygan called Lakeland College, and we had a program there with Malawians, teachers from Malawi coming to the college to get their master's degrees in early grade reading instruction. So they came over, they visited a children's reading garden in Sheboygan called Bookworm Gardens. It's a beautiful place, and it's themed gardens based on different children's books. And they saw, there's lots of interactive things to do. They, sort of the garden brings books to life with sculptures and things you can touch and play and do and get in the scenery and get on the magic school bus, so to speak. So they were so excited, and they said to me, we wish we could have something like this someday in Malawi. And I planted that in the back of my head. And then 2 years later, I came, circumstances were such that I applied for a grant to my undergraduate alma mater, which is Vassar College. They give something every year to an alum to do something risky and fabulous. And I thought, well, maybe I could build this reading, they could do this reading garden idea. So I wrote a proposal and they accepted the idea. And the next thing I knew, I was off to Malawi. Now I didn't, people say, how long were you there? I didn't stay there for like a long, long time. I went in three different trips back and forth to get information, to go to the school where the garden would be, to talk to the teachers, to talk to the kids. One trip, a friend of mine who's a reading specialist in the Sheboygan School District came with me to help the kids with some different projects. And the biggest moment of pride was bringing, if you've heard of the story of a man named William Kamkwamba, it's kind of in the buzz right now because he was the boy who harnessed the wind, and there's a new film about his life. He's also got a memoir. That's how I first learned about him. There's a children's book, beautiful illustrated picture book, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. I was able to find him, meet him. I mean, he lives half the year in North Carolina, so he wasn't hard to find. But hooking up with him in Malawi was fascinating to get that, you know, set up. And then to bring him to the school to talk to the fourth graders on the site where the reading garden will be. And hopefully someday to have a windmill there, because that's what he did. He made windmills. He made a windmill from junkyard scraps, brought electricity and water to his village in the time of drought. I mean, he did these things. He got swept up by TED Talks. He went around. He got a scholarship to Dartmouth. I mean, he's in his 30s now. When he did all this was in the early 2000s as a 14-year-old boy, built a windmill. Changed the world right there, his world, our world.
We are talking to someone who's risky and fabulous, for sure. And we're going to hear a final poem.
Let's see. We'll do this one. This poem is called Lesson at the Checkpoint, and it begins with a sign in LaGuardia Airport, and the sign said, please be advised that snow globes are not allowed through the security checkpoint. Is this because of the snow or because of the little houses that nestle inside the snow? I imagine it is because of the liquid and the potential to inject an explosive into the dome of the glass. Evil is inserted every day into our minds, under our skin, through the iCloud, through layers of data that shred the ozone. An ozone held together by scotch tape, chicken wire, and American Idol. One day, someone picks us up, shakes us, and all hell breaks loose. Worlds collide, the very equilibrium we once believed in, cast aside by the wave of a hand, while some god, somewhere, waits at a checkpoint, watching for the terrorist in each of us, wary of small things like 6-ounce jars of olive spread, beard trimming scissors, and yes, snow globes, these things tucked between the socks and underwear waiting to destroy us.
The voice of Lisa Vihos, and she makes everything better, not only in Wisconsin. Thank you so much. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on location. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation. with additional support from the Sinipet Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.